Greet you in Jesus' name. Good morning. Good to see you here. Different place, but same group. And, well, mostly, I suppose. And it seems like it wasn't very long ago, but I guess it was, what, three years ago? Revivals? I don't know. I didn't even look at the time. But anyway, it's good to be here again. The children of thy elect sister greet thee, John would say. I suppose that's what we are in Missouri. So we do seem to have a little bit of a teacher exchange program going on the last few years between our states here, our places, and that's I hope that is for our mutual benefit. Maybe that's a good thing to do it that way. Anyway, Brother Jonathan asked me to fill in here on our little quick visit here, and so I'm just going to share a message that I shared last Sunday at our local congregation there, and hopefully there are roughly the same amount of people here that are in focus as we had there. So I'll ask you, first of all, how many of you fall between age 30 and 60? Raise your hand. Between 30 and 60, so a lot of adults here between 30 and 60. Sometimes in the middle of life, you are astounded, maybe scandalized, but shocked anyhow, when you learn that some respectable acquaintance of yours has suddenly fallen on hard times, or fallen into sin, or fallen into some kind of failure, and you think, how could she do that? How could he do that? Why did he trade away so little, or so much for so little? And we scratch our heads and we wonder how that can happen. A middle-aged, stable person, and I imagine that in the past, there were plenty of fathers in Israel who shook their heads when they heard about Saul running around, trying to kill his son-in-law, David. Saul, he was the man of God. He was chosen and ordained and anointed, and he was quite a success. But he had an anger problem, and he tried to kill his son-in-law, and civil war came out of that. And I suppose that later many priests in Israel wept in disbelief when they heard that David, the man after God's own heart, had fallen into adultery, murder. They just couldn't believe it. What happened to David? I'm sure that even among the disciples, can you imagine the morning after, I don't know where they were hiding, but Matthew and John and Bartholomew and Philip sitting around talking in low tone saying, did you think Judas would do that? Did you think Judas would do that? Judas? I mean, he was here the whole, did you have any idea that he was thinking about this? Selling out Jesus? Well, I'll say it this way. Sometimes we have messages to the youth. And we talk about the temptations of young people, and even David writes that way. He says, Lord, don't remember the sins of my youth. But David, that's not when you lost it. You lost it in middle age. And I would like to think that, I don't like to think, I think that in our, especially maybe this is true in a land of relatively trouble-free Christian living. We're not bothered by our Christian choices. But I think that those of us who are middle-aged children of God are especially vulnerable to what Christian writers in the past called acedia. Now, that's it's a word we don't use much, but acedia is simply referring to the tendency in the middle of life, the 30 to 60 realm, age bracket there, to slide into a kind of spiritual apathy, maybe restlessness, maybe depression, maybe discouragement, or just some senseless temptation, just falling into to unbelievable failure and apostasy in the middle of years of our life. And it doesn't make any sense. Turn to Psalm 91 for our beginning text here. Psalm 91. verse 6. He's talking about calling on the Lord here. Thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night, and so on. Verse 6, nor for the pestilence that walketh in darkness. Maybe that's some kind of illness. Nor for the destruction that wasteth at noonday. And Christian writers in the past, especially through the medieval period, they interpreted this verse in a personified way, the destruction. And in fact, the Bible of the Middle Ages, the Vulgate Bible for 1,000 years, St. Jerome there, that was written not destruction, but the demon of noontime, or the devil at noon, meaning it's a particular kind of spiritual attack that comes in the middle of the day. And they meant it, they thought of it in a sense of the particular kind of vulnerability that happens to people in middle age, the middle of your day, not old, not young, but the middle of your day. And so they referred to this as the midday demon or the noonday devil. You might have read that term before. What is this devil that attacks us in the middle of life? The title of our message this morning is Fighting the Noonday Devil. And I want you to think, first of all, with me a little bit here. And these are broad generalizations, so give me a little space. It might not catch you right where you are, and that's okay. But let's think a little bit about what happens after you leave your 20s, maybe, and you're getting into middle of your life. What happens? Well, you know, when you're in your 20s, maybe, you might be married and be starting to raise a family and starting to pay on mortgages and doing things like this. And you're under a certain level of kind of disciplines in your early married life that are unique. You're not a teenager anymore, but think about what happens when you maybe cross 40 to 55 and somewhere in there. A couple of things happen. For most people, for many people, the financial pressures start easing up a little bit for the first time. They do, for many of us. You start leaning on your older children to help you at home or with family projects. You have a little more help, maybe. You're not up at night with infant care as much as you used to be. And you have a little more buying power than when you were 25. You can do more things because you have leverage. You have more voice in the community, probably, than when you were 25. You might be given leadership roles in business or in church or in school or in community projects. You might have employees who do what you tell them to do. You might be spend less time with toddlers and more time with the problems of grown-ups. Maybe you're caring for your aging parents. Maybe you are ministering in a counseling role to somebody that's an adult rather than caring for children. So these are changes that happen, broad strokes, and you become preoccupied or maybe even exhausted, with the weight of all of this, okay? You're directing employees, maybe you're directing children, maybe you're telling teenagers how to navigate life. You are working with a lot of things at once that leave you maybe exhausted with a thousand details. And yet, you have, God willing, reasonably good health, and maybe a fair dose of energy and idealism left yet. You're not exactly 18 anymore, but you still have some interest in pioneering some things. You have some energy left. The challenges and the excitement of early married life and raising children and getting a home set up and all of this has maybe starting a business. Maybe you started a little family enterprise and maybe by your 40s and 50s, those things have kind of leveled off into less of an adventure. And some days just feel more like a treadmill. Maybe you just keep on going. It's not an excitement a day anymore. And the combination of all of this that I just described can come together into a unique vulnerability that's well known. Sometimes we just call it a midlife crisis. People go through a midlife crisis. But it's a special period that can be wrought with self-doubt And temptation, discouragement, experimentation even, when you're between about 40 and 60. So I'm going to just group these a little bit now, and forgive me if it sounds somewhat discouraging and negative, but I suspect that if you're in this age bracket, you're not going to find it very foreign, even if it is unpleasantly familiar. But turn to Matthew 13. I'm going to characterize this noonday devil under about four areas that seem to be common to a lot of middle-aged people. But in Matthew 13, verse 22, Jesus tells the parable about the kind of seed that fell where? Well, among thorns. And this is the kind of person that the cares of his life, the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becomes unfruitful. And I'm not going to focus on the riches part here, but the cares choke out the fruitfulness that could be in his life. Now, what does that look like if you're a middle-aged parent? I know sometimes that young people will look at your busy life, middle-aged people, and they pretty much say, why do you do this to yourself? Why are you so busy and so involved in so many things? And if you're there, your reaction is not, well, do you think I chose this? Is this what I've chosen? Well, no. No, more often you probably struggle with resentment. Like, I wish I could get rid of some of these things, divest myself of some of the things that make me too busy to have time for the family picnic or whatever it is. We don't like that. And you'll see sometimes a middle-aged person reach that crisis point where they flip out. Their breaker trips, and they all of a sudden say, okay, I'm done. I'm going to resign off of every committee I've ever been on, and I'm just quitting right here, because I need to get my life back under control. You may have seen people like that. They pretty much put a close for business notice on their life, and they shrink back into some kind of survival mode because they just can't take the cares anymore, just the pressure of so many things to take care of. And this is as practical as, let's see, do you mothers, if you're in that period of life and you're do you ever have hassled school mornings? I suspect you do. You know, there's so much to do on a school morning, isn't there? The pressure is on there. There's a time crunch. You have to be at school at a certain time, and there's all this. And it's at those moments, I suspect this happens up here. It happens in Missouri. It's at those kinds of the time of your day where when that WhatsApp post comes with, you know, the little fake pictures of latte art and roses and so forth, and it has some wonderful inspirational meme on there about just taking time to smell roses and enjoy the good things today, and so on. And that can feel like the last straw to a mom on a school morning, right? Because you can't do anything about it. You still have to get the children to school and get the hair done, the breakfast done, and everything. And here's somebody who has this, you know, this idea of how the world might be for you. And deep inside, you kind of suspect that middle-aged moms who have time to post that kind of thing all the time probably aren't doing their laundry or smelling the roses. It's you just feel that edge where it just takes about everything you can do. And you're keeping up with all this stuff and making meals and trying to keep your house respectable and all the things you have to do and take care of the sick children and all the things and keep up and have time for him, right? And quality time for your marriage and you can feel like you can't get your breath. How are you supposed to be this beautiful, well in control person of your, you know, control of your life when you feel like you can't get your breath? This is how cares can overwhelm us in middle age. Cares and duties. This is point number one, by the way. I forgot to say it. But the first area of this problem is that cares and duties just overwhelm us. And if you're below this time of life and you don't quite understand this yet, well, you just listen. It's not that scary, but it is real. So we'll get there in a minute. But for the brothers, maybe a preoccupation with your work, it has the same kind of choking power. Turn a few pages later here to Luke 12, where the man who has done well, Luke 12:15, he's done well, or 17 there, the ground of a certain man brought forth plentiful, and he thought, what shall I do? I'm out of room. And he said, I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods, and I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? And the sin of this successful farmer here was not that his fields did well, or that he cared about taking care of his crops by having a big enough barn, a granary to put things in. That wasn't his sin. His sin was that he had striven completely to stockpile the things for himself. It was entirely self-centered busyness that he was after, and this is how it can be. You know, in middle age, around your middle, 40s and 50s is sometimes the first where you really get the economic ball rolling, where things start going a little better, and like they say, the first million is hard, but after that it's easier. And it's true that the thing leverages on itself, and if you've had good success in business, by middle age, all of a sudden this thing just rolls a little easier, and it's easier to buy more land, it's easier to expand because you have this barn building ability like this man did. And so that can choke your time in a kind of spiritual hazard, and success can turn busy middle-aged men into rich fools who fill their barns, but they don't have anything else prepared. That's point number one. Cares and duties can overwhelm us. The second one is that first love cools in middle age sometimes. First love cools. And you might think back to the time when as an adolescent or a young adult at some age, you broke down, you gave your life to the Lord, and you had an ardor of soul. This was wonderful. You felt liberated, and you felt free, and you felt on fire, and you read your Bible diligently, and like the psalmist, the songwriter says, where is the blessedness I knew when first I sought the Lord? Where's the soul-refreshing view of Jesus and his word? And so you can go through your 30s and 40s, and you're busy with raising family and so forth, and you realize that it's just harder and harder to maintain my worship personally. Or there may be half-heartedness towards spiritual labors. This is maybe a unique area of trouble with middle-aged men. I'll just say it that way. That you know how the song says, I would not with swift-winged zeal on the world's errands go, but labor up the heavenly hill with weary steps and slow. This is a particular kind of temptation for middle-aged men. They're busy. They can get up at the crack of dawn on Monday morning and roll the trucks out the road and get things done, and they're successful, and they build big projects, and they do all this kind of thing. And then somebody says, would you be free to substitute in school tomorrow or something like that, or help in the mission project or do something? And, I'd love to, but my schedule is just really full. I got to say no to something, and on and on and on. But really, they're quite capable. They're quite capable of doing many things. And in life, in church discussions sometimes about having services, there's always the hand that says, don't we just have too many services? We're never at home with our families. And many times I've noticed, I'm sorry, those are the very men who are out at 6 o'clock Monday morning on the road to work, not with their families. They're getting the ball rolling, and they have lots of time for whatever they want to do. This is a unique kind of spiritual apathy to the middle-aged men. It is, because they have a lot of burdens. They have a lot of things to keep rolling. And if you ever have a headhunting capacity, like you're on the school board, you need to find someone to serve somewhere. Maybe you're seeking people to go go to New York for Jesus or whatever it is. You just need people. You need people to get on this project. And you realize how hard that can be, right? People aren't free. I'm just not available. That's a special kind of middle-age apathy that can be hard. It could be a first love of another kind that cools. We'll speak a little in a minute later about this. It could be a first love in your marriage, first love in your loyalties to your brothers and so on in church. But a closely related thing to losing first love is that the conscientiousness of youth kind of hardens into cynicism in middle age. The conscientiousness of youth hardens into cynicism. I want you to read Psalms 10 with me, a few verses here. This is an instructive picture that's kind of dark, but it's closer than we like to think. Psalm 10. He's talking about the wicked, how callous the wicked are, but let's start in verse 4. The wicked through the pride of his countenance, he will not seek after God. God is not in all his thoughts, and so on. Verse 6, he has said in his heart, I shall not be moved, for I shall never be in adversity, and so on. He does all kinds of bad things. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, he's preying on people. Verse 11, he has said in his heart, God hath forgotten, he hideth his face, he will never see it. And the lesson I would have here about middle age cynicism is something like this. Why can significant moral failure or financial fraud sometimes hit people in middle age? Maybe it's something like this. See, it's not the young people who are particularly the savviest at leading a double life. They're too green. You think young people are bad? It's nothing compared to middle-aged men. I'll tell you why. It's because it takes you to middle age till you learn how the wheels go around on things. And a middle-aged businessman is way better at some sneaky stuff than a young man because he knows what is enforced and what isn't in life. He knows the tax code. He knows the local zonings. He knows what you can get away with. He knows how gullible an average customer really is. When you're middle-aged, you know what you can get away with in business. And your conscience, and besides, you've lived some decades now, and you haven't been struck down, and you can get careless, and nothing happens, and you have a way to walk in life with your ethics that it works. No one really gets after you about anything, and you become less and less sensitive to what you should be sensitive to, whether it's government or finance or, and this is how men can go from being conscientious to the jail cell in the middle of life because they just lost their sensitivity. And another kind of sensitivity that you can get dulled in is that by middle age, many of you have gotten bumped around a little bit by the flaws of brotherhood life. You've gotten bumped around a little bit. Church hasn't worked out for you everywhere like you thought it might. And you can become sort of jaded about brotherhood covenants and about your loyalty to the local body of Christ. And after all, I mean, by middle age, you've certainly learned that church leaders aren't the sharpest cookies. And that things are a little bit the way they are in human relationships. And you can just sort of get cynical about that. And, you know, people aren't that hard to fool after all. And they're for sure not consistent. I mean, nobody is. And so you cut yourself some space. And you may even notice that the new arrivals at your brotherhood, the people who are new to your church, you see how zealous they are about keeping things working here the way it should and so on and believing in the best of people. And for you, you can sort of, these guidelines we have are a little bit outdated anyway, and I'm mostly keeping them. And so I try to make sure that at council meeting, I at least say that I really appreciate the church because that's about all I can say. And you just sort of make your own path for yourself. And this is a kind of loss of first love that can harden. And maybe it's the other way. Maybe as you get toward middle age, you have some unresolved pains. You have some hurts from your teenage years, your young married years, maybe some past church experience, and you start entrenching. Middle age is when victimhood really gets deeply entrenched. I have not been treated right. And I do what I do, and I struggle with what I struggle with because I have pain in my life, and I don't know what to do about that. And I just I've had setbacks and people pick on me. And I lose my ability to see what God did for me. That's a cooling of your first love that falls into that. Well, point number three of middle age is that discouragement and restlessness can replace God's love and peace in your heart. Discouragement and restlessness. Now, are those the same thing? Discouragement and restlessness? Well, they certainly can be. I don't have to talk to you about discouragement and maybe even depression in the middle of family life. This is common enough. Your youngsters just take everything out of you. Maybe you have a teen that is not following your wishes, and it just saps you of your joy in living, your joy in life. It just saps you of your idealism. It just saps you of the ability to keep on going with a positive outlook on family life. Or maybe work isn't going well, finances aren't going well, and we can just sort of get into a trench of discouragement and boredom, self-pity, whatever. This is a common thing in middle age, and what does it do to you? Well, it saps you of all your energy. It makes you procrastinate your parental duties and your responsibilities at work and so forth, because you're just down. This happens. You give up, or you may go on a search for waking yourself up. Restlessness, and so I sometimes, you know, this the old saying that the difference between boys and men, the difference between men and boys is the price of their toys. And so we sometimes think, well, the youth are experimenters and they're restless and they get into all kinds of stuff. Oh, there's nothing as restless as a middle-aged man with money in his pocket. He can do a lot more than teenagers can when his soul is restless, because he can, you know. He can afford to restore antique cars and have a cabin in Wyoming you know, maybe it's time in middle life, you're just so bored with everything else in life that it's time for me to get my pilot's license, because, and I'm not saying those are wrong, I'm just saying this is how restlessness can come out of your soul in middle age when you feel discouraged about everything else and you need excitement because it's empty inside here. And you see old men, even upper old men, they decide it's time to do really something like, I don't know, skydiving for the first time or some adventure, because there's not peace inside, and they're on the roll, and they have money to buy an experience. They can buy excitement easily. And so it may not be money. It may just be time for a new job. It may be time for a new church. It may be time for, God forbid, you see this happening, the restlessness could tempt people in middle age for a new romantic interest. This happens. And restlessness can lead you down dark trails when your heart is empty in middle age. And this comes to number four here, the last one. In middle age, you're vulnerable. You can be vulnerable to great temptations that you didn't see coming. You can be vulnerable to infidelity, for example. Because when you have this perfect storm in middle age where you are spiritually cooled off and your schedule is overloaded and you have money, this is a perfect combination for you to really catastrophically fall. Turn to 2 Samuel 11. I want to point something out here about this story of a fall. 2 Samuel 11. Look at the previous verse to the beginning of the chapter. So 2 Samuel 11 is the story of David's sin. But 19, the verse right before it, When all the kings that were servants to Hadarezer saw that they were smitten before Israel, they made peace with Israel and served them. So the Syrians feared to help the children of Ammon anymore. And you can read it in the prior chapters here, how that David was at the peak of his power. He was on a roll. He had military subjugation of all the enemies around him, pretty much. And he was wealthy, and everything was going well for David. Verse 1, and it came to pass after the year was expired, at the time when kings go forth to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the children of Ammon and besieged Rabbah, but David tarried still at Jerusalem. And it came to pass in an evening tide that David rose, and so on goes the story. Okay, the lesson there is that David was not prepared for the temptation because of a combination, I would say, of his heart being not in control. And it's an old story. It's an old story. We sometimes look at this story as David is the aggressor and Bathsheba is the victim. We don't know. I personally question that version of the story. I think that they shared in this. We don't read anything in this story that she ran from him like Joseph in the Bible. How can I do this great wickedness? All we know is that later, after the sin and after she was with child, she sent secret messages to David saying, you know, I'm kind of in a fix here. What are you going to do about this? We don't read that she told her husband Uriah about the sin. We don't read any of this. But either way, that when you have middle-aged men and women whose lives are not in tune anymore and their first love is cooled, they are prime targets for infidelity. And how our workplaces and our culture are so full of this. They're so shot full of this. And it's a deceit. The most common divorce age in America is 30 to 50, that this is when people fall into this sin. And I'm not speaking about this because I think this is a problem in your brotherhood here. I am speaking about it because you are absolutely not immune to this. You don't have to be attractive in middle age. You can see it in the culture around us every day that people who are no longer beautiful by American standards are still falling into adultery all the time because the devil deceives them into thinking this would be the way to fulfill an empty life in middle age, and the pressures of your life, even as a Christian dad and a Christian mother, can be so much so that you are not strong enough to resist the attention from somebody else when it comes. You're not ready for it in middle life because, well, it's kind of stressful at home anyway, and sometimes this pressure, especially when it is empowered by authority or money. You know what I mean? When a man has both authority or money, or both, God forbid, it can put him in a place where he's able to imagine his fantasies of infidelity in ways that he couldn't in another time of life, and he turns into dark things because he can't discipline himself. This is true. If David was a man after God's own heart and he could fall like this, I can too, and you can too. This is the unpleasant reality of it. Well, let's conclude here with something more encouraging and not so discouraging. I've painted a rather dark picture about middle-agers, and the young people might be sitting here listening, wow, you are a lot of people. With all that you have facing you right now, and we don't know. Is our mom and dad actually okay at being middle-aged? I don't know. You have to ask yourself that question because it is unique. You have unique ones. Let's go to James 4. Let's see some answers now. How can we resist the noonday devil? I had four areas of vulnerability. First love cools. Cares overwhelm us, discouragement sets in, and we're vulnerable to temptation. But in James 4, we have some really straightforward direction for noonday devils. James 4, verse 7. Submit yourself, therefore, to God. Resist the noonday devil, and he will flee from you. And do what? Draw nigh to God. And I'll put it this way. You're not going to fight the noonday devils of your middle-aged life if you put up no resistance. If you invite them in for tea and entertain them and talk with them too much. You don't think that if you spend too many minutes of your day, men especially, on your phone reading all about the things, the wicked things in the world and the news items that are lurid and evil, and you want to read about it there, you don't think the devil notices, oh, this brother is kind of interested in this stuff. He likes to read about wickedness in high places. He likes to read about infidelities among CEOs and political leaders. He's really kind of curious about this. And you don't think the devil's kind of talking to each other and say, this is John here. He's you know, he really shows a lot of interest in wickedness. We need to hit him up there. He looks vulnerable. How could David's story have ended so differently? How could David's story have been so different if instead of dawdling at home, he was out at Uriah's side fighting the enemy? This is the option that we have, that leaders have. Conquer the enemy. How different could some of your battles be in your home if instead of playing tug of war with your wife, you would join her in the spiritual battles? Protect your family. Join your brothers at church instead of playing tug of war with them on church matters. What if you would join them? That's resisting the devil. And if you're a modern day husband, you're not a king sitting at home like David, but if you're a modern day husband, you can do the same kind of failure he committed, except you could do it on your phone. And instead of joining your men in battle when the others are out fighting the enemies, you can be dawdling away too. Well, we have to resist. So I have a few here in conclusion that I think are important points. How do you resist the noonday devil? Well, number one, name the devil. Name the devil because it's a little different for all of you. It might be depression and discouragement. It might be lust. It might be power politics, it might be a bitterness problem or an anger problem. It might be, you know what they are, greed, pride, self-pity. Maybe your wife could help you or your husband can help you name the devil in your life. Do you think that they don't already pretty much know what the devil is in your life that's trying to get you in middle age? I believe they probably do. I want you to turn to, you're close here, turn to Ephesians 6. There's an interesting point here on resisting devils. Ephesians 6, where in the context of the armor, put on the armor, that ye may be able to withstand, to stand against the wiles or the trickiness of the midday devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And my point here is that we sometimes think that our trouble in middle age is about managing my weight and my cholesterol and my serotonin and my gluten intake and my thyroid problems and all these things and having enough sessions with my psychiatrist and so forth. And those are things that are flesh and blood, and they may be real, but Paul's point is that that's not really where the battle is. You're battling spiritual things, spiritual powers. And so one of the strengths that we have to hold on to is that this is a spiritual battle, and we have to name it. We have to call it a spiritual battle. Now, I'm not saying that those other things are wrong. I'm just saying that they're not ultimately what your midday struggles are about. Those are secondary. And first, it's a spiritual battle. Number two, nurture your spiritual and emotional hungers. The noonday devil walks about seeking whom he may devour, and you can be sure that the first people he looks for is hungry people. He's looking for hungry people. There's no one so vulnerable to a noonday devil as a hungry man or woman. And by that I mean a man whose soul or a woman whose soul is not filled with worship or with drawing nigh to God. We're pretty much telling Satan, here I am. I'm available for your try me out. Try me out. It's that simple, brothers and sisters. If you're too busy to worship, you're too busy to spend time in the Word of God, to listen to God, then you're pretty much going on your day, you're going into your week with a sign on your back that says, I'm available, devils. I'm available because my soul is empty. I need something. And they'll be there. They'll be there to help you. And it's not that discouraging because somebody else sees you hungry. Who's that? It's Jesus. He sees you hungry too. And he's also saying, I'm here. I'm here to fill you with all the good things. Come, take my yoke. It's not that hard. I will give you rest. I will provide rest for your middle-aged restlessness. I'll help you out. And somebody else is close to you, not just the devils and Jesus, but you have brothers and sisters. And I promise you, for whatever you think is wrong with your life in middle age, or the things that bedevil you, if you would go and tell somebody else your age at church here, they wouldn't go, what's wrong with you? They would be most likely to go, I know, me too. But the devil tells you that won't happen. They'll tell you that if you say that to anybody, they'll be thinking about, should we send this person off for counseling, or what's wrong with this person? That's what the devil wants you to think. But the reality is that your middle-aged peers are not going to be surprised because cultivate your conscience. I want you to turn to Luke 1:5 here for this one. Cultivate your conscience. We talked about cynicism setting in. There's a beautiful story here about some middle-aged or older folks here. Maybe they were middle-aged. Maybe they were on the upper end of that. But Zacharias and Elizabeth, you know, priests there in the time before John the Baptist was born. And they were both righteous before God, verse 6, walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord, blameless. And I want to tell you, if you have a couple that's in their 50s or 60s or whatever age these people were, if there was a couple here that had room for a midlife crisis, it was Zacharias and Elizabeth. They were in apostate times. What all was wrong when John the Baptist came on the scene? Well, you know what all was wrong. There was horrible treachery and apostasy and the Phariseeism and all of this. And so you could say for them, for Zacharias and Elizabeth, church life was a bear. It wasn't going well at all. And what's more, they had the burden of childlessness for decades on their family. We know this is true because when the angel showed up to Zacharias, he said, Zacharias, I've heard your prayer, Zacharias. Oh, you mean it wasn't Elizabeth that was all upset about not having children? Oh, no, he said, Zacharias, I've heard your prayer. And they haven't even been talking about the prayer. The angel said, Zacharias, I know what's wrong with your middle-age problems. I know your prayer. The church is messed up. You don't have any children, even though you wish you would, and so on and so on. I've heard your prayer. And Zacharias and Elizabeth were blameless, walking in all the ordinances and commandments of the Lord. That's a beautiful picture of conscientiousness in middle or older years. That you could say it like this: if I become careless in my small conscientiousness, if I don't resist the little temptations in my life in middle age, if I can't say no to my snack addictions, and I can't say no and learn how to be conscientious about everything from local ordinances to highway laws to whatever else, or if I can't get any traction on my anger problem and the way I snap at the children and get cross with my wife, I just can't get anywhere with that. And year after year, I have to say to my peers and so forth that I struggle with it. I struggle with this, when really it means I'm just not putting up much resistance at all. If I can't work on the little things in my life, the little conscientiousness, do you think that God is going to miraculously carry you out of the big temptations if we don't demonstrate any resistance at all on the little things? Well, that's a challenge for us all. It can be so small in our personal lives. Well, Romans says at one point, Romans 13 says, knowing the time, it's time that you wake up because now your salvation is closer than when you first believed. Well, middle-aged people, I'm here to tell you that your salvation is closer than 20 years ago when you first believed. And so knowing the time of life you're in, it's time to be calling, he says, put on Jesus and stand within that strength. Because it doesn't have to be a dark story. We use this in our benedictions. I think it's meant for middle-aged people. He is able to keep you from what? Falling. Have you known any middle-aged people that have fallen? Yes. He is able to keep you from falling. But it's better than that. He didn't just pull you back from the edge, warts and all, and present you how? Faultless. Now, middle-aged people, if you have any teenagers and you ask them whether you're faultless or not, you know what the answer is, right? They know the answer. Or you ask your wife if you're faultless or vice versa. Or that could be risky, I don't know. But you're not faultless. But he is able to present you to whom? To God, faultless, before the presence of his glory with exceeding joy. So I want you to remember the joy word. That's the last word of the sermon here. He's able to do it with exceeding joy. And I just encourage you as middle-aged moms and dads, don't give up. Greater is he that is in you than he that is from the noonday devils. You have that strength. There doesn't have to be a blot on the Kirkwood congregation that a middle-aged person fell, because all of the resources are available. Let's pray.